This has been a pretty lengthy standing ovation, and the governor is about to be introduced.
Members of the Joint Convention,
again,
the governor of the state of Michigan, Rick Snyder.
And now, Governor Rick Snyder's 2015 State of the State Address.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you for that warm welcome. Good evening. It's great to be with you tonight. Let me start by recognizing Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, Speaker Cotter, Senate Majority Leader Meekhoff, Senate Minority Leader Ananick, House Minority Leader Grimal, members of the legislature, members of the Supreme Court, members of the Court of Appeals, Secretary of State Ruth Johnson, Attorney General Bill Schuette, cabinet members, ladies and gentlemen of the legislature, I also want to recognize we have council generals from Canada, Iraq, Japan, and Mexico here. And I also want to recognize we have a representative from China with us, fellow public servants. And then in particular, I'd ask all members of the Michigan National Guard and all our members of the military to stand so we could give you special recognition. So if all our members of the military would stand. Thank you for your distinguished service, keeping us safe. Citizens of Michigan, and last but not least, I want to recognize my family. Thank you for all your support. What I'd ask now is a moment of silence. Over the course of the last year, we lost one of our Michigan service members, Sergeant First Class Michael Carthart of Bay City. In addition, we actually lost several law enforcement individuals, first responders, and public safety officers in the state of Michigan. So I ask you that you bow your head for a moment of silence out of respect for their service, keeping us safe. Thank you. Let me begin by saying we've taken on many challenges that people thought were unbelievable. We've made the old unbelievable, the new achievable. And we've taken on many difficult issues. Michigan is a much better place today than it was several years ago. We're better, but to be open with you, better is not good enough. We need to do more, and that's what tonight is about, talking about how we go to the top, to build on the foundation we built, but go farther and better to keep up the path of success. In terms of the talk tonight, I'm going to follow my traditional format. I want to share several things from the dashboard because it's important that we're measured on the success that we achieve. I'm going to talk about 2014. I'm going to talk about 2015. I'm going to give you a roadmap of activities during the course of the year for key events. And then I'll close. In terms of the dashboard, we should be so proud. In terms of the big industries in Michigan, what a great achievement. The auto industry, what a great comeback. And again, I hope you have the opportunity to make the Detroit Auto Show, the North American International Auto Show. You can see how tremendously exciting the industry is. But to give you one number that stands out, since 2010, we've had a 48% increase in automotive production in the state of Michigan, nearly a 50% increase in 4 years. For our food and agriculture industry, food and agriculture is critically important. They've been a shining star for us during the difficult years, and they're only continuing to shine brighter. We set a new hallmark, a new benchmark, that many people didn't think we'd achieve in terms of the size of the industry. So just this last year, it was announced that the food and ag industry in the state of Michigan has now exceeded $100 billion of economic activity. In terms of tourism, we continue to do very well. Pure Michigan works, folks. We love it. But to give you a benchmark, over the last few years, in terms of out-of-state tourism to Michigan compared to just 2010 or so, we're now seeing on an annual basis over 2 million more tourists a year from out-of-state coming to Michigan than just 4 years ago. That's tremendous. In terms of our citizens, though, we're all seeing great things. If you look at job creation in our state, we've created over 300,000 private sector jobs in the last 4 years. Tremendous success. Our unemployment rate has dropped significantly. In 2010, in December, it was 11.3%. In November of this last year, it was 6.7%, a 40% decrease in unemployment in 4 years. And December's coming out tomorrow. We'll see if we're going to have more progress in moving Michigan forward. In terms of housing values, if you compared us to the rest of the United States and you looked over the last 4 years, how have we done? The rest of the country averaged 16% increase. The state of Michigan, 25% increase. So we're seeing those home values come back for our citizens that they deserve. Well, let me jump right into 2014. And one thing I would ask, and again, you never hear this out of most politicians, I'm not a career politician, is I'd ask you actually hold your applause, except for recognitions of individuals, because I want to get to 2015. And I'm excited to get there. But I do want to give you an update on what transpired this last year in terms of major accomplishments. First of all, on more and better jobs, the skilled trades. One of the things I'm focused in on, and I know we're all excited about this, is to make Michigan number one in the skilled trades in the United States. We started that path last year. We created the Skilled Trade Training Fund for our community colleges, $50 million to invest in needed equipment for our community colleges to do that training. We created the Skilled Trade Training Fund to help companies be successful, and we've seen over 10,000 Michiganders get additional training, job opportunities and such because of the Skilled Trade Training Fund. One thing in particular I'm proud of that is not just about what we're doing today, but how we're preparing for the future, is FIRST Robotics, a tremendous program we've been supporting. If you look at kids that do FIRST Robotics, the likelihood they'll go into engineering or the skilled trades goes up dramatically. We were number two in the country several years ago. Over the last few years, we've added teams. This last year, we added 77 teams, more than the other 50 states combined, 49 states combined. We're up to 349 teams, 110 more than California now. And we're moving to be a leader in that. And I want to give a shout out to Kettering University that did a first of a kind community center for FIRST Robotics teams, and they've been a true leader. We have the president of Kettering here tonight, and I want to recognize him, but I also want to recognize a student named Harrison Ford, not the actor, the student Harrison Ford. And the reason I want to mention Harrison in particular is he's a junior now at Kettering in their co-op program. He's doing tremendously well, but he was on a FIRST Robotics team, and it meant so much to him. He's now a mentor for another FIRST Robotics team in Flint, the Flint Fire. So this is a case of someone having success giving back. So let's give a big shout out up in the balcony for both Dr. Robert McMahon, the president of Kettering, and Harrison Ford, a student at Kettering. Thank you so much. Keep building those robots. Major things accomplished. Personal property tax reform, the vote in August. It was fundamental in terms of making us more competitive. That ballot proposal passed with resounding support. And what does it mean to Michiganders? Hardworking Michiganders will now have opportunities to work in small businesses because they're more competitive, and local government has a more consistent source of revenue. That was an outstanding reform. If you look at how we've done in Michigan in terms of our rankings, in terms of our tax climate, our business tax climate, over the last 4 years, we've gone from 27th to 13th, and even more importantly, in terms of entrepreneurial climate in the state of Michigan, we've gone from 44th to 6th. That's the kind of environment that's going to create jobs in our state. Let me talk about education. We should be absolutely proud. We have been a leader in the nation with early childhood and preschool education. For the last 2 years, we made major budget commitments, $65 million a year for a total of $130 million on an ongoing basis. We've created over 29,000 new opportunities for people in need, young people in need, to get preschool. That's outstanding, and we should be proud. Another thing in education I want to mention is a partnership with the Attorney General. We came out with a hotline, a confidential hotline called OK to Say. And has it been successful? We've gotten the first semester results back. We had over 400 tips come in, and they addressed important issues such as bullying, helping suicide prevention, child abuse, and it's there to also deal with potential cases of school violence. OK to Say is working, and we should be proud. So I want to thank the Attorney General for his partnership on that effort. In terms of big things going on in terms of Michigan with people, a huge success is Healthy Michigan. It launched last April. It's our version of Medicaid expansion done right, involving wellness, personal responsibility. We now have over 500,000 Michiganders participating in the program in just that number of months. In terms of what it means to their lives, we've seen over 350,000 primary care visits now taking place. Those are big numbers, but the important part is now we're helping real life people move from being uninsured in the ER to now move to a preventative care environment where they have a medical home, and it's something to improve the quality of their life and save us all money. And I want to give a shout out to a key mover in making that happen. He was in the House at the time, but I want to give a shout out to Senator Mike Shirky for his great work on that. Another area of achievement I'm very proud is I did a disability employment directive towards the end of the year about how the state of Michigan can do better about hiring people with disabilities and then training our people to better understand the challenges people with disabilities face. I'm very proud to say I did that before I became a person that can now have greater appreciation of people with disabilities. And this particular circumstance I have now is only temporary, but it really has given me a much greater perspective on the challenges that someone with a disability faces. You might find it intriguing in terms of support. I actually had recommendations about how to come in tonight. One was by jetpack through the ceiling. My personal favorite, I like the idea of the zip line from the balcony. But realistically, when you have a disability, you have to be thoughtful. And I want to thank the work that was done to put that directive in place. And now we're going to go statewide. We have a summit coming up for disabilities in February. And I want to give a shout out to two people that have been leaders in that, Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly and Justice Richard Bernstein. Our military and veterans, critically important. I'm really proud of what we've done there. One program for our National Guard members is we came up with a tuition assistance program that has gotten tremendously positive response. These people put their lives on the line for us and they deserved it. And it was about time we got it done. The other thing that's tremendously exciting is we're leading the nation in some of our activities with our veterans. We did a partnership with the United Way and came up with a 24/7, 365-day hotline for one-stop shopping for our veterans that's 1-800-MICH-VET. And we're leading the nation in that, and we should be proud. With respect to our seniors, we did some tremendously positive legislation there, thanks to the Silver Key Coalition and all the great legislators here. We're making Michigan a no-wait state for in-home services, and we passed legislation to deal with senior abuse in terms of being more proactive. Good work again by the legislature. Public safety. 2 or 3 years ago, I made the point that we have 4 of the most violent cities in the United States in the top 10. That's unacceptable. Have we fully gotten off that list? No. But have we made tremendous progress? Over the last 3 years since we've had that program going, to give you an idea of results, the 4 cities, Detroit, violent crimes down 20%, Saginaw, violent crimes down 26%, Pontiac, violent crimes down 28%, Flint, violent crime down 28%. We're going to keep it up. We're going to stay committed. We're going to get them off that top 10 list. And that's important. In terms of the... Thank you. In terms of the environment, we set a big goal on recycling. We had fallen behind recycling. We think the deposit bill makes us a leader. We actually had gotten behind in actually doing regular recycling in this state. We are a laggard. So I appreciate the direction to say, let's double our goal. Let's go from 15 to 30%. And we set the goal to say we'd get there in 2 years. We are on a path to get there in 2 years, and we should be proud of that. The other thing in the environment I want to recognize is we did a really innovative, important package working with our hunters and fishermen in the state. And it wasn't about just getting more resources. They want to invest, but it's about doing world-class management based on sound science to really keep our natural resources strong, thriving, have more hunters out there in the woods doing good work, having more fishermen catching big fish. And we're making progress in Michigan on that front. The last topic I wanted to cover on 2014 was efficient, effective, and accountable government. A couple things is, first of all, we had a very challenging year. This was a year of disasters in our state, and many of you personally had to go through those experiences. We had huge floods in southeastern Michigan, we had floods in mid-Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula we had a huge freeze problem, we had a propane crisis in the Upper Peninsula, we had the Ebola issue. What I would say though, that we should be proud, both in terms of preparedness, in terms of working on these issues ahead of time, but also in terms of our response. We saw a tremendous response, not just at the state level, but all levels of government and the private sector coming together to deal with that. And so I want to give a shout out in particular to our first responders, in particular the Michigan State Police with Colonel Etchew, our local emergency management people, the first responders in all our local jurisdictions, FEMA and the SBA. Thank you so for your great work. In terms of local government, one thing I have to mention in terms of opportunity and great outcomes is the city of Detroit. We emerged from bankruptcy from the city of Detroit. A tremendously hard, difficult process that many people came together to do special things that stand out. And I do want to recognize the people that really made that happen. I want to recognize the retirees who made a sacrifice, who went through very difficult times, and they were with us, though, to support the grand bargain. I want to recognize the hard work of the people at the DIA in terms of raising resources, the foundation community for raising resources, all the great work that took place through this process to make Detroit a stronger, better place. In particular, I want to thank Mayor Duggan. Mayor, thank you and the City Council for your strong effort. A gentleman, a fellow U of M alumni who did tremendous work. We want to get him back in the state of Michigan, Kevin Orr. And some of the individuals couldn't join us, but Judge Rosen and Judge Rhodes did tremendous work in this effort. And I want to thank each and every legislator for your conference, your courage to come together to stand up as Michiganders to say we are all one state. We're strongest when we recognize it's Detroit, Michigan. And the thing I'm proudest to say, after how many decades can each one of us say now that we all have the common goal of not dwelling on Detroit's past, but saying let's grow the city of Detroit, in particular put an emphasis on the neighborhoods to bring them back to be a great place to live in our state. Let's see Detroit continue going up, and Mayor, you have my support and partnership in helping make that happen. Thank you. Well, thank you. Now for 2015. I'm excited, and I hope you are too when I'm done. First of all, I want to recognize great bipartisan work done at the end of last year. And it was about doing a bipartisan solution to deal with something we knew we had to do, and that's a transportation proposal, to deal with the fact that we have rotten roads and bridges in our state. No one in Michigan likes our roads and bridges. We got that work done, but our work isn't done. Now we need to ask our citizens to support that effort in May on the ballot. What is this all about? The key issue is public safety. If you look at it and you look at our bridges, 1 out of 9 is structurally deficient. You might have read about Cincinnati today in terms of bridge challenges there. 1 out of 9 being structurally deficient. So when you drive Michigan and you see plywood underneath that bridge, Why is it there? It's keeping crumbling concrete from falling on your vehicle. That's unacceptable. When you talk about our roads and you see those potholes, just think about the issues and concerns. You've had this personally. When you swerve to move that pothole, you're a distracted driver. You're putting yourself at risk and other drivers at risk, other people. If you hit that pothole and you blow a tire, you're at risk of a major accident. That's unacceptable. We need to do something, folks. It's time to get it done. When you look at the cost structures, we actually looked at the state of Indiana and saw that on average, we spend $132 more than the state of Indiana for damage to vehicles in terms of road damage. That's a lot of money, folks, to offset the cost of this proposal. In the end, what I need you to do is vote yes. Vote yes so we can have safer roads. Vote yes so we can get rid of those crumbling bridges and crumbling roads. Vote yes so we can have stronger schools and local government. Vote yes so we can have tax relief for lower income people. There's only good reasons to vote yes. Let's get it done. Let's get it done in May and do it right. Thank you. Now let me come to the most significant part of the talk tonight. This is about revolutionizing how government operates. This is time for the big vision. There's a better way to do things in government, and that's what I want to share with you now. I call it the river of opportunity. And let me set the stage for you. Before our country was even founded, why did people come to America? And after it was founded, why do people continue to come, and why do they come today? We are the land of opportunity. That's what makes us who we are. Now, the issue is do you have a fair chance to have that opportunity in our country? If you happen to be in the mainstream of the river of opportunity, and you grew up in a great family with wonderful parents supporting you, you went to a good school, you got good advice when you were looking for a career, you found a good first job, you build a career, you're on that path to great opportunity. If you look at it, what's government's role in that situation? Government's actually in the background. It's still there, it's doing things like public safety, important things, but it's in the background of your life. In fact, you're a contributor to helping others. And you do that through multiple mechanisms. Paying taxes is helping. I know you may not feel that way, but that's the point. You're helping contribute to charities, to churches, to nonprofits to help people. You're volunteering your time to help people. Everyone in America fundamentally wants to help other people. And you're one of those people doing that. I'm proud to say I was fortunate enough to be in that mainstream personally. I grew up in a 900 square foot house in Battle Creek. My father owned a small window cleaning business. My mother was a homemaker. We never had a lot, but I never wanted for anything. I accepted that, and they were wonderful. And I was fortunate enough to be in that mainstream of the river of opportunity that now I can stand here as governor of the state of Michigan. How do we create opportunities for those of people that are not in the mainstream of this river of opportunity is the question. And why do people fall out of the mainstream or are not in it? In some cases, they don't have parents, or they don't have parents at home. They have severe poverty in their family. They may be in a situation where either to get to school or get to work, they need transportation, and it's not there, creating a barrier to success. They may have an illness. They may have a disability. They need government support and nonprofit support. Government moves to the forefront then. And how do we help them succeed? Now, how have we done this in the country? If you go back to the 1930s, we built a system that was about adding programs. And these are good, well-intentioned people, but if you look back over the last 80 years, what have we done? We've added prescriptive program after prescriptive program. Where do we stand today? We've counted 145 plus programs already and still counting. 35 in healthcare, 40 in workforce, 70 in child services. The system is failing, folks. That's not how you solve the problem of helping people have opportunity. What we've done is we've sliced and diced people into programs. We've moved away from treating them as real people. In fact, in some cases, we've taken some of their dignity away as a person by putting them through so many programs. The other problem with all these programs is, what have we done? Quite often, we're addressing symptoms. We're not addressing root causes. We're actually facilitating dependency on government. That's not right. We've also built a lot of bureaucracy and inefficiency in the system, and that's not right. In fact, if you look at it, where is our society today? And you look at people that are in the mainstream of the river and people that not, that gap of difference is only increasing. That's unacceptable. And we should not take it. We need to stand up and say there's a better way to do things. And how is that? It is time to step back and say, let us restructure government to create the river of opportunity by understanding that we're talking about people, not programs. And there are five guiding principles we need to stand up and say we should be following to help create opportunities for success for people. The first one is, again, it's about people, not programs. The second point is, it's about root causes, not symptoms. Third, it's about maximizing results, not spending money in government programs. Fourth, it's about recognizing it's just not about government. This is about community. This is about friends and neighbors. We need to engage the entire community. We need to be that village of support together. And fifth, we need to measure outcomes and results. And what's the measurement of success? It's not how many people were facilitating or maintaining their dependency. It's how many people that were outside of that mainstream of opportunity that we have now moved into the mainstream so they can be successful. That's what this is about. The question in your mind is to say, that's great talk, Governor, but is it doable? It is absolutely doable. We have been doing it in the state of Michigan on a pilot basis for several years now. Now is the time to expand, to roll it out, to bring it in a bigger fashion to everyone in our state. Let me mention two of those programs. One is Pathways to Potential, a program we started several years ago where we asked caseworkers to leave the government office. They were happy to. We put them in the local schools. We have caseworkers in 219 schools in 22 counties in our state. They're now there with the kids that they're there to help, with their families, seeing what their lives are like, not in some government office. Is it making a difference? There are many metrics and measures of success, but I'll give you just one. Chronic absenteeism, one of the key constraints to success, is down by one-third in the schools where we have pathway people versus where we do not. That is success. Another case is helping the structurally unemployed, the people that have not been successful at getting in the workforce, having that opportunity to be on that path of the mainstream again. So several years ago, we created this program with solely state dollars because the federal programs were simply not good enough to be flexible enough. So how is that program done? We've now placed over 3,000 individuals and over 100 companies with a retention rate of nearly 70%. It's making a huge difference in people's lives, and I can give you an illustration. The number one reason we found for the people we've been servicing that they couldn't either get training or work to be successful, it was a lack of transportation. And by having the ability to have these wrap services to look at the big picture, we've been able to work on that. This is the kind of attitude. Now, I want to share a story with you that goes way before Community Ventures to show how powerful this can be. And I want to thank the people from Cascade Engineering and actually the Department of Human Services for their work. This goes about the story of Amy Valdez in terms of her life. In 1998, she was a single mother with three kids. She was living with her sister. She was looking about getting assistance. She had the opportunity to go to Human Services. She actually ended up with a job at Cascade Engineering, an outstanding company. They actually went out of their way to pay for a caseworker to be in their company, to give her support, and to give other people support that were in similar circumstance. Now, we're talking quite a few years later, 16 years later, where is Amy today? Amy is a top-tier operator in the company. She's a team leader. She's training other people to be successful. She owns a home. I asked her about her three kids. She's proud about one just graduating from college, doing well. The others are on the path to success. That's the kind of success we need to bring in terms of solving problems for people. So if it would be okay, I'd ask them to stand from Cascade Engineering. We have Fred Keller, the founder of the company. We have Joyce Gutierrez Marsh from the Michigan Department of Human Services, and we have Amy Valdez from Cascade Engineering. Let's give them a big shout out. thank you for being a great role model for all of us. Let's do this all across Michigan. Now the next steps, where do we go with the River of Opportunity? Just as I said, let's ramp up these programs, Pathways to Potential, Community Ventures, but let's also restructure government. Let's step back and look at how we're doing things in the big picture. We've started already. One of our goals is to be number one in the skilled trade training. And to help do that, I did an executive order earlier or late last year to really put together our talent operations, our workforce operations with the MEDC and our economic development operations. We created the Department of Talent and Economic Development, a step to move in that direction in that part of the world. The next step is I'm working on an executive order that I will issue to take the Department of Community Health and the Department of Human Services and merge them into one department to focus on health and human services with supporting agencies, so we can be much more one-stop shopping, really human-focused, people-focused, on how to deliver great services to our citizens there. And I would appreciate your support in those outstanding efforts. Other things we need to do. We need to go to the federal government. We need to say 145-plus programs is not the answer. Let's go ask for waivers and say, how can we consolidate these programs so they're about a few outcomes to help people, real people? And let's do that. And then coming back to my comment about community, let's go do outreach and figure out how we do public-private partnerships to engage all of us in helping one another, whether it's people volunteering their time, other efforts, to really make sure this happens in some positive, supportive way. If you stop and think about it, what is the River of Opportunity? The vision is about creating opportunities for success, not facilitating dependency. And the mission, help people to succeed, not build government programs that spend. That's the kind of attitude we need. And now I'm going to transition right into education because that river opportunity applies to education as well. Two huge areas I want to mention in particular on education. First of all, we need to put a stronger, much stronger focus on what I describe as prenatal through third grade, P3. One of the important metrics in someone's life of the river of opportunity is the ability to be proficient reading by third grade. How have we done? We were at 63% in 2010, we're at 70% today, about a 10% improvement. We can't be proud of that, folks. 70% doesn't cut it. We've already done some great things that I know will improve that number, such as our investment in early childhood. As those kids age, that can make a huge difference in that number, but we cannot stop there. I'm going to ask for additional resources when I present the budget to say let's invest more in that area. I'm also asking the legislators to work with me to create a commission outside of government with people from all sectors to say, how do we look at best practices? It's a model that's worked well in places such as Tennessee. So let's work on third grade reading. And I do want to give a shout out. I want to give a shout out to two representatives, Amanda Price, Adam Zemke, and then Senator Phil Pavlo for your great work in this field. So thank you for your efforts to help push things along. I've never seen shy representatives and senators like this. We need you guys to get stand up for a good applause. The next area is something other else critically important. It's the intersection between high school and higher education. We've built artificial boundaries that create inefficiencies and failure points for our young people. And what do I mean by that? First of all, if you think about it, think about your own situation and think back. How good did we do career counseling for you back in high school and when you were starting college? Most time people just smile because you didn't get any help. And very few people are getting the assistance they deserve and could really use in terms of career counseling. We need to improve that. But what else can we do? That's where you find the skilled trade training, career tech education, job-oriented career tech ed. But the problem is it in the ISD or is it in the community college? And do you know where to look and how to get those programs to work together? We need to dramatically improve that. Again, not threatening the organizations, but creating partnerships. And then you look at the question of accelerating, getting people through faster, and then helping reduce college cost expense. That's dual enrollment, that's middle college, that's all these other opportunities. That falls right in that sweet spot of that intersection. We need to build a seamless system. So the users of that system don't need to figure out where they are, where they fit in, what separate place they need to go to, versus making it easy for them to get assistance, understanding of where that career counseling is, where those great career tech opportunities are, how to do it faster and better and less expensively. That's the path to success. And I want to give a shout out to a group that's starting to do that. And they came together to make this happen, and they're with us tonight. It's Marquette Alger Technical Middle College. And what have they done? It was a combination of Eagle Mine, a company coming together with Northern Michigan University, and then the school districts in both Marquette and Alger County to say, let's create a middle college. And for those of you that don't know, a middle college is an opportunity to get your high school diploma and either a technical certificate or credits towards an associate degree or an associate's degree in 5 years. What a tremendous outcome. And we've got several people with us today that I want to recognize that are part of that. If you could stand, we have Cody Revord, a junior in the program, Fritz Erickson, the president of Northern Michigan, Shantae Lassard, corporate responsibility manager for Eagle Mine, and Stu Bradley, the chairman of the education committee at the institution. Thank you so much for your innovative work. That's the kind of creativity that makes Michigan great. And thank you for coming from the UP to visit us tonight. The final thing I want to mention on the education front is to continue some work we didn't finish in the last session, and that's let's finish teacher effectiveness. Our teachers deserve the best tools to help them be great teachers, and we should be working on that. In terms of more and better jobs, a couple things I would mention. First of all, we're going to create regional prosperity teams. We have the 10 regions across the state. But as Michigan has come back and been strong, doing well in so many different ways, there are certain geographies that are being left behind. And I'm talking about urban and rural areas that have not been participating. And what I want to ask our 10 regions to do is identify the places of greatest need within their region, where they're willing to devote resources, and we'll bring our resources to the table, and we'll go to those communities, and we'll help them be successful in job creation and training and making sure they're participating in the comeback of Michigan. So we're going to make a focused effort there. The other thing I call for is a continuation of the dialogue and discussion on Elliot Larson. And I appreciate the prior discussions that were had, but let's keep up that dialogue and let's show that we can deal with issues of discrimination in our state. Thank you. On the people front, we have a problem that we need to address. We've worked on it, but not good enough. And that's the case of drug abuse in our state. The numbers show we probably have about 650,000 plus people with a substance abuse disorder. If you looked at it in terms of death from drug overdose and drug poisoning, that number has gone up fourfold since 1999. Last year we had a summit on heroin to help address the issue, but that's not good enough. So I'm making a call now to say, let's develop a comprehensive plan by October where we can do more to prevent drug abuse within our state and help these people. Energy and the environment. We need a long-term policy, and so March, I'm going to do a special message on energy. The main pillars are affordability, reliability, and environmental protection. It needs to be an adaptable policy because of the lack of federal policy and the challenges of a global marketplace. We need to focus in on important things such as eliminating energy waste and the conversion from coal to natural gas, an asset of the state of Michigan, and renewables. And the other part of that is we can do better to organize ourselves, so I'm calling for the creation of an agency on energy that would combine the MPSC people with energy office people, with people from experts from LoRa and the MEDC on how we can all work together to come up with better policies. And one area in particular I would mention that we should be proud of is we made tremendous progress on solving a huge crisis and threat to the Upper Peninsula, that we've announced agreements now that can make a fundamental difference for the UP. We need to make sure those agreements get executed and completed, but we can show we can do great things on energy in our state. I'm going to go fast on the next two or three because I don't want to run out of time on some cool stuff again. On invasives, we're doing great work, and this is a year to really step forward on invasive species in terms of identifying priority areas, early detection sites being put in place, and education of our citizens. And so that's a big investment we will be making that will make a difference. In terms of effective, efficient, and accountable government, I'm asking our legislature to work on doing fiscal notes with legislation so we can see the budgetary impact and how to be more efficient. Now I'm watching who clapped to see if we can make sure we see those turned into votes. We did legislation at the end of last year on an early warning system for municipalities. We didn't finish the work on schools, and we need to go ahead and finish that work on schools. To give you an update on something, though, that was of interest to many people, on the whole situation of emergency managers. Since I've been governor, we've had 11 different cities or school districts that have had an EM. I'm pleased to report six of them have left emergency manager status, and we have a seventh on the way. The system is generally working well, but the point is, let's avoid emergency managers, let's do early warning, and the other thing I'm calling for is we need to do a scorecard for all local jurisdictions and state jurisdictions about financial performance and performance in terms of objectives that's easier for our citizens to use and to see. Let's create this easy-to-use scorecard that our citizens deserve so we can be more accountable and transparent on how we're operating and what our challenges are within government. An important opportunity. One subset of that in particular I'd like to mention that we're working on is in the case of Detroit, for example, and a few other communities. We have an uncorded educational environment where we have a school district, we have the case of Detroit, the EAA, we have charter schools. It's an environment that's not creating success for our students. They deserve it. They deserve to have a great education, so they have a bright chance at college, career, and life. And we need to do more on that. And I appreciate the work going on with the coalition now led by the Skillman Foundation. But before the first half of the year, I hope to call for legislation to bring more structure and more thoughtfulness to deal with these challenged situations. To say the answer, in my view, needs to begin by saying we need to raise the bar and standard on every educational institution, whether it be a public school, a charter school, the EAA, and we need a common bar that's a high bar, that's an increasing bar to make sure these kids get the best education possible. Thank you. And I want to give a quick shout out. I have a fellow CPA that's been a great help in this, and that's Representative Earl Pileski. So, Earl, thank you for your work on that.
You're listening to special coverage of Governor Snyder's State of the State Address on the Michigan Public Radio Network.
We have some awesome schools in Detroit, and I want to recognize that, and we have a great illustration here tonight. Davison Elementary Middle School, they have something called the Techno Dragons. And it's an awesome program where the middle school students are essentially the tech support for the institution. They're one of the most outstanding schools in Detroit. And the point here is, in even the environment we have today, some of the best schools you can find are right in Detroit. We should be proud of that. But I ask our Techno Dragons and their teacher and coordinator to stand up. Let's give them a big round of applause. Now for the roadmap for the year ahead. In February, we're going to do the budget. And in particular, we have challenges because of tax credits from the last decade. It's going to require a special work, extra effort, but we're not going to be beaten by some legacy of the past. We're doing smart things today, and we'll work through those issues. But in particular, I'm looking towards Chairman Pashoka and Chairman Hildebrand for your leadership on the budget, about getting a budget done 5 years in a row, on time, done well, and balanced. In terms of other things, though, in March, we're going to do statewide summits with the regions on both jobs and education, and I invite you to participate. In March, we'll do the energy message. In May, I'm going to do a special message on criminal justice. And in October, we have to work on the drug abuse plan and get that in place. So we have a busy year. Now, in terms of closing, what I'd like to say is, first of all, the last 4 years, we're a special honor to be your governor. And the teamwork that we showed and the bipartisanship on how we could take on tough problems and solve them together, to act above politics. We took on problems that had been there for decades, whether it be the Grand Bargain, Healthy Michigan, so many different things, transportation. We should be proud of that. We still have some to clean up. We need to finish transportation. We have this tax credit issue. But the second 4 years in particular is an opportunity to set that big vision for the future, to finally step back and say there's a better way for government to operate. And that's the river of opportunity. This is truly an opportunity to revolutionize how we operate and recognize we work for real people. We work for them. They deserve results. They don't deserve to be a number of 15 different programs. Let's do something about that. The other thing I would mention to you in particular, it's kind of interesting the timing of this event. In a couple hours, you get to hear another speech. And what I would say on that is, I think it's a great opportunity for you to watch both speeches. And not just watch the speeches, but watch the outcome and results. While we've solved problems in Michigan, we have gridlock in Washington. And this is not a partisan comment, folks. Both sides have huge issues. Gridlock is not a good answer for any of us. And if you look at the positioning, they're already figuring out how they can take shots at one another. We don't do that here. Does it make a difference? It absolutely does. We use relentless positive action. Thank you. Thank you. For the historical archives, I would have it noted that's the latest of my five speeches that phrase has been used. We use relentless positive action to solve the tough problems, where they spend most of their time on fighting and blame and leaving those problems for future generations. We balance budgets. We pay our debts. We've reformed our tax system to be simple, fair, and efficient. We've worked above politics to do great things, as I mentioned, the Grand Bargain, Healthy Michigan. We're leading the nation in creating manufacturing jobs. We're leading the nation in early childhood education. We're going to lead the nation in career tech education and the skilled trades. We're going to lead the nation in treating our citizens as real people, not programs. With your partnership, we're going to continue moving Michigan to the top, to say we can be the best, to do the right thing by our citizens. And it's something we should be proud of. It's going to require hard work. It's going to require cooperation, understanding. But as relentless positive action works, let's not talk about how we differ. Let's embrace diversity as a positive power. Let's find the common ground and take on those tough issues and solve them together. Because that's what our citizens want. That's what they deserve. So thank you for the opportunity to share tonight with you. Thank you, good night, and God bless the state of Michigan, the United States of America, and each and every one of you. Thank you.